Welcome to the Propulsion Swimming Podcast, where we aim to give swimming the coverage and publicity it deserves. Every week, we celebrate the sport we love with amazing special guests and topics from around the swimming pool. And now, here are your hosts, Scott and Dan.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to what is going to be a very special episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast. You may have already guessed by this podcast title. This week, we are joined by British superstar, Olympic champion, world record holder, and all-round breaststroke king, Adam Peaty. Dan, this is going to be a hell of a lot of fun, isn't it?
I tell you what, I'm super excited because this is going to be our biggest episode yet.
Yeah, I'm going to enjoy this. As everyone else at home, first and foremost, we are swimming fans and we are definitely big fans of Adam. So without further ado, welcome to the Propulsion Swimming Podcast, Adam Peaty. How are you doing, Adam?
Hello, thank you for having me. Yeah, I'm good. It's, well, just trying to get as much rest as I can really into Europeans now. So it's a little bit of a different time of year. Obviously, every Olympic year you do Europeans, but obviously for the British swimming team, it's more of a stepping stone into Olympics than a end of target meet, like a lot of European countries will take it. So yeah, just trying to gather as much rest as I can and see what we got when we're out there.
How does it work with Europeans being so close to trials? Are you back in a hard training block now after like a mini taper for trials? Are you resting up for Europeans and expecting fast times, or are you training kind of through it?
Pretty much training through it. What we do is we almost have like a drop. I don't know what we call it, a drop rest, I guess. Mm. So it's like literally 4 days of, you know, good rest, as opposed to Olympics, which you do, you know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks taper. So we're not expecting obviously to get anywhere near the times we normally get to or the ones at trials, but you know, it's all about obviously racing hard, racing strong, enjoying it as much as you can enjoy a 9 day bubble. In your own room, I guess. You know, that's the struggle of modern competitions, isn't it? It's like, you know, it's not necessarily the racing, which normally, you know, is tiring. It's all the other stuff that you've got to deal with nowadays.
Has your training been impacted? Because, of course, you're a dad for the first time now. So what's having a young family like at the moment?
Yeah, it's good. My family, well, George and Ari are both away in Wales, so I can focus on training a little bit more now. They come back on Friday night, then I leave on Saturday morning to go European. So, yeah, not much time, but, you know, these next 10 weeks are, you know, pretty much dedicated to, you know, performing at Olympics and trying to get the most we can out of, you know, that time and that commitment that, you know, is going to require for that performance. So, yeah, I mean, it's a little bit different these days, obviously, but, you know, it's all good.
Got a good kind of family support network around you, and they sound really understanding if they're going away to Wales and letting you concentrate. I mean,
yeah. I mean, it's really a job for the whole family. When you're, you know, an athlete, it's not necessarily what you do in the pool. It's you know, what you do on those 18, 20 hours of the rest of the day, which are, you know, most important. So, yeah, I mean, to obviously have a family which understands that, she obviously understands. George has no clue what's going on, does he? So he's I'm sure that he would love it, you know, when he comes of age of, you know, understanding what, you know, his dad or his mum do. So,
yeah, I'm sure he's got loads of YouTube videos he can go through when he's older and search his dad's name and see what comes up. If we look back to trials, which were, what, 2-3 weeks ago now, we spoke to your teammate Luke Greenbank about what kind of the Mel Marshall squad were doing in preparation. A few of you were already pre-selected for Tokyo, but you were still tapering with the expectation of finding out what sort of times you could do and then seeing what needed to be worked on for the next training block leading up to Tokyo. Now, your times in the 100 breaststroke, they were fast. They weren't slow at all. So does this give you a lot of confidence? Is there a lot to work on going up to Tokyo now?
There's always obviously things to work on. You know, if you waited until the perfect time, you'd never have that time, as the saying goes. So then there's always a continuum of things which are always moving. There's different variables, you know, and different training and all these kind of, you know, variables which play a part in the performance. But, you know, in trials, I think I had pretty much a drop taper of about 1.5 weeks. So it's a semi-taper, really, we call it. But yeah, I didn't really expect to go that fast. That was the fastest I've ever been in April, by like nearly half a second. Normally go like 57.7, I think I do, or 57.8, or around that marker, because you're really coming out of the aerobic phase into an anaerobic phase. So Europeans really is to get as much race pace as we can, and you know, do as much as we can within that kind of block, and you know, come back, have a few days off, and then hit the training again into Glasgow, and then that's it. We're pretty much 5 weeks into the game. So yeah, I mean, I know it's going to be hard out there because a lot of these, you know, countries will be taking it, you know, very seriously. But you see the exact same thing you see every Olympic year. You'll see a lot of people smash it at Europeans and not be able to back it up at the Olympics. And that's just the way it is. Like, there's only a certain amount of time you can commit to racing fast in a year, because you need all the background work. You need the aerobic block. You need the anaerobic block. You need the race pace, the max VO2. That is like the system you need. So if I've pretty much rested four trials and then rested again for Europeans and rested again for Olympics, you'd probably see like a line instead of a curve upwards in terms
like
of
a plateau. Yeah.
So, you know, it's, I've just got to accept now that, you know, it's just obviously really the pressure isn't really on me at Europeans, because I know exactly where I'm at. I probably know where they're at. And, you know, I've got to just go out there and try and extract as much information and data from my racing as possible.
How much work has gone into your starts and turns? Because we've noticed from the Manchester meets and at trials, they've just come on so well, so much. Because back in the day when you were racing Cam Vanderburgh, you were about half a body length behind. And now you're at least level or maybe even ahead. How much work has gone into that behind the scenes with Mel?
A lot of work. And it's not just Mel, it's obviously the British swimming team that are at Loughborough. But you know, it's really kind of dissecting, and again, you can't really see those improvements overnight. You'll see them over like a few years. But the dive is almost kind of nailed in now, turn's pretty much nailed in, and really the swimming is. So you should be seeing, you know, faster than ever swims, but unfortunately sport doesn't work like that. But, you know, we're just going to go to Olympics now. And again, this is why Europeans are so important for us, because we won't be able to get to Men Austria, and we won't be able to get to Setakoli. We won't be able to do anything, really, because of this, you know, COVID. I'm absolutely fed up of COVID, if you can tell by my voice. Because I was meant to be in Tenerife for like 3 weeks. But you just can't risk it, because if one person has on the flight, then you've got to quarantine. And then on the way back, you've got to quarantine. And it's just, yeah, it's just absolutely ridiculous, really, in terms of logistics. But, you know, you got to try and stay as positive as you can, really.
I mean, this is what your only chance to race a field that isn't British, basically.
Exactly.
I think we're in a very lucky situation that the breaststrokers behind you in Britain, they are good. James Wilby, we think he's a medal threat for Tokyo as well. So the Manchester meets, the trials, you're not racing by yourself. You do know that you have to work. Do you have a lot of kind of self-motivation when it comes to those races or any race? Because I know the times that you're hitting, there isn't actually too much competition around you when you look at how close everyone is. How do you motivate yourself going into a race?
I just get angry, man. I enjoy the process of racing. And I think it's really, if you set the bar here, so if the bar was here at a minute point, you'd continually try and hit a minute point. 59, you'll try and continually hit 59. But if you go down to a 56.8, you can't obviously do that, but you try and get as close as possible. So it doesn't become, it's not a game really of, you know, self-motivation. It's a game of, you know, how close can I get to those times as much as possible? So at trials, how close can I get to a 57 low? And, you know, how fast can my dive be, or how good can my turn be? It's really like as simple as that. It's two lumps of the baths, really, isn't it? Swimming. I think a lot of athletes around the world overcomplicate what they do. And I think that's why sometimes they won't be as liberated in their swims or in their performance than they should be. And I think if you're not liberated and you're not enjoying it, then you almost give yourself a reason not to perform at your best. So, yeah, so motivation, really, it's just an all-round kind of just go for it, I guess.
Well, I suppose the big question is, what is your target for Tokyo? Of course, you had Project 56, which you achieved a few years back now. What is your aim? Have you got a target time in mind?
I don't think I've got a time, but I think I've got an idea of what I want to go. but you never know until the day you start racing, because at commies, I felt all right, to be fair, going in, and then I absolutely came out like absolutely horrendous. So I think you can never really tell. You just give your 110% every single day if you can, and then try and turn up and do something special, I guess. So I think I don't really have a target. Obviously, you want to win. Obviously, you want to break a world record. That is the goal. But, you know, again, sport just isn't simple, and it's not as easy as saying, I want to do this, I want to do that. And it's hard, especially now in COVID times. It's hard for a lot of athletes to, you know, even turn up. So it's like, you know, really now I just want to make sure that I'm enjoying the sport and I'm doing everything I can. Because don't forget, like, this year is, we've already done this pretty much, and we're doing it again for the same goal.
Yep. So
it's becoming very, almost like it's very, I don't know what the word is.
It's a little bit like stale.
Yeah, and it's a bit of a state of attrition. So yeah, it's almost like it's costing you more than it should. So I just want to get to Olympics in a good place mentally, good place physically, obviously. And I think the rest will take care of itself. Because if you take care of yourself as a human and as a person, which we all are, then you can, you know, perform as an athlete. So, yeah, I mean, I will not lie. It has been really hard, really hard as an athlete, because what normally is your timeline of almost kind of, for me, I rely on competition to, okay, I need to do that. I need to improve that. I need to do that. But when you take that away from almost a whole year long course, it's like, okay, I've gone out of that, and, you know, back at trials, yes, it was, I saw him really well, but it's almost like you haven't really had any recognition or kind of gratification, I guess, in your performance. And I rely on that as an athlete. So there's literally been some days, I know, like 3 weeks before trials, I was like, what am I even doing? I do not enjoy this. And I was, honestly, like, I think people need to hear that, because I was like, in a state where I don't enjoy the sport that I'm doing and commit my life to, what is the point? So you've really got to strip it back and go, okay, this is why I'm doing it. That's why I'm doing it. And slowly build that momentum back up. And, you know, 2 weeks time, you can go 57.3. So going into the Olympics now, it's like, okay, there's obviously a lot of pressure and a lot of stress and a lot of things going on with COVID. Just, I'm honestly this close to switching off all my social medias and just like forgetting about it and just focusing on just what I'm doing. So it's just, there's literally, COVID has, I don't think it's obviously COVID, but it's the results and the kind of thingy of COVID, isn't it? And the bloody, what do you call it? The protocols that you have to follow. I've literally had about 20 emails about Europeans. I'm like, I'm fed up of getting 20 emails. No, it's really about everything in balance, isn't it?
Do you know what? That's really interesting to hear. So many people we've talked to on this podcast are silver linings. They're happy to be racing. They feel privileged to be in the pool, but you don't really hear about the suffering behind the scenes. We had a question lined up because it's Mental Health Week. So many people see these massive achievements, these world records you're setting. You're on top of swimming. You are the peak of swimming right now. And it's almost like people don't understand that there's suffering behind the scenes. And we were going to ask you, are there any struggles that people don't see? But I think it's answered that.
A ton of suffering. And like, for example, I woke up one day this week, I was like, I just don't want to swim today. And that's very irregular for me, because I'm like, you know, I love what I do. But because the strain has been so big, and the Europeans is obviously a meet which is almost half-hearted for me, because I know I'm not rested. I know I've got to go in there to obviously race and do what I need to do. That you're like, it's almost hard to find your feet. And I think when I'm in that mindset, it's just very, just laissez-faire. I'm like, I'm all in and I'm all out. Like, if I don't want to do something, I don't want to do it. But for like Olympics, I want to do it. So I'd get up with a, you know, smile and crack on. So the positivity is, it's hard to come by when really, like, because, you know, almost get like, because ISL was so long in Budapest that we've got to go out to Budapest again, do another 9 days in a room. And I know it sounds very, you know, pedantic, or, you know, you kind of complaining, but it's nice where you're meant. I think that's the line that you have to cross, that your mental well-being, if it's causing you stress and it's causing you a bad state of mental well-being, it's not being negative, or it's not being, you know, taking these situations for granted, because I've heard so much of, you know, athletes saying I'm grateful to be able to race, and no one's really actually saying the real stuff, which is like, this has been hard.
Yeah.
And you know, when you move in the Olympics, which you are periodized for, you've done a whole winter's work, a whole January work, a whole February work, and you've done a 58.1 at Edinburgh for the, you know, coach to turn back on a Tuesday morning and go, you pretty much, you know, you go home this week. Then on the following Sunday, obviously Boris announced that we're in lockdown. And then a few weeks later, the Olympics were cancelled. So, you know, I'd really challenge someone to say, you know, if they were saying that, then, you know, you've got to realize that there's people out there that need to hear that it's not all, you know, a silver lining. If, you know, if any of it is a silver lining, because, you know, this is what we do. And if you take away the competition and the racing, what is left? What, 5K, 10K a day in the pool, which is very tedious at most times. You know, you've just got to be real with yourself, haven't you? And you've got to be real with, you know, the people around you. And that's why I'm always honest with Mel. I was like, Mel, and, you know, earlier this week, I was like, Mel, this is really, really hard. This is hard to psych myself into a competition, which I know is going to be hard. And I know I'm going to be racing people who are tapered. So it makes it even harder to obviously go out there. But I think that's, you know, it's all part and parcel. If you can get up and still go through your hard days and still turn up, that will eventually come into your character, and you can look back and go, if I've made it through, you know, these ridiculously hard times where you do not want to turn up and you do not want to do what you're about to do, and you can still get that performance, then nothing can beat you. Even if you come last, then you've been on that journey that no one else has been on, or, you know, very few people have been on the rebound. So it's all about character, right? And it's all about, you know, how that implements your personality. And I think that eventually that will come out of this COVID kind of a period of our life, and hopefully look back and put it all behind us and have a laugh about it. But right now it's very, very hard to be an athlete, definitely.
So when you're struggling for self-motivation, do you sort of rely on anyone like Mel, for example, or another coach, or anyone staff-wise behind the scenes? Do you sort of grasp a bit of inspiration from them, or is it solely down to you?
I think I'm very intrinsically motivated. So all my motivation comes from these. I don't really care too much. I used to care about, you know, money and, you know, all the other stuff and cars and whatever and how you look. But now it's like, none of that matters. If you don't enjoy what you do, then, you know, throw that out the window. So really you got to strip it back and go, okay, what's my intrinsic motivation? Is it for a legacy? Is it for, you know, is it for George? Is it for this, or is it to merely win gold, or, you know, get world records? And it is a mixture of all of them, but I think there's three layers that I use, and I keep it very simple, that motivation and the hard times, because, you know, they're constantly in balance like this, you know, one goes up, one goes down, you know, and, you know, it's very hard to find an equal state of play. But as an athlete, you start as self-talk. I think self-talk is very important. Okay, this is just a bad patch. You just go through this, just turn up, do this. And I've had these numerous times. I've spoke to about numerous times in 2019/2018 when I was going through that. And, you know, then it goes into, okay, I need to speak to someone. Is that a coach? Is that an assistant coach? Is it, you know, is it a friend? And then the third level is where it's getting, you know, really out of control. And that's like a therapist or, you know, someone else. So I really do think that communication is vital in that, because if you let it all bottle up and you let it pretty much go till you explode, one, you'll even make a stupid mistake, because these emotions build up in terms of anger for me. So it's like, am I going to headbutt someone for telling me no? You know, it's stuff like that where you're like, oh my God, like, yeah, I feel so angry today. And like, the things which normally wouldn't annoy me, such as, I don't know, like a car coming towards you and they're not waiting for you to go and they're not saying thank you. It's like, oh, you know, sometimes you just brush it off, wouldn't you? But now, like the other day, it's like, oh, I'm very angry here. That's made me annoyed. But that's all about being human. I think people see athletes as these superhuman, level-headed kind of, you know, on Rocky, what's the Russian, the Soviet guy called? He's like, you know, if he dies, he dies. Like he's a robot. People see us as like these kind of linear, no emotion kind of people who just get the job done. But I think that's what makes us the most powerful, is that we have ups and downs like everyone else. And we use communication to, you know, identify that and be honest with ourselves. And I think if you know, for kids out there these days, it's going to be ever more important for them to be emotionally intelligent as social media grows and it becomes more a part of their life. So, you know, if you're constantly looking at outside and looking at what they've got, or, you know, they've earned this much or they've got that job, it's a rat race. You'll never, ever win. Never win, because you'll always look at things that you don't have. And that's what I try and teach kids through, you know, the clinics, and try and talk to kids about this stuff, because I don't really believe that anyone else is doing it as an athlete, or, you know, an athlete top of the game. Just be honest, that it's not all rainbows and flowers, that, you know, just because you get to the Olympics and you get the Olympic gold, that, you know, all this comes for free, or, you know, you've still got to put a huge amount of work in every single day. And that's the difference between a one hit success and, you know, a success that's sustained over 7 years.
I think athletes are in a really tough situation. It's almost lose-lose. People want to see your personality. They want to see you on TV, the Usain Bolts giving everything to the camera. But then the moment you actually speak your thoughts or opinions, I know there's all the stuff about the protests at the Olympics that have been everywhere in swimming this week, which is frankly a little bit ridiculous. The moment you guys speak up and actually say what you want to say, everyone suddenly kicks off and be like, no, we don't want your personalities. It's tough, like, yeah, you said, especially for young guys coming through when they've got all the social media to deal with. You've got to be educated in so many different things to understand that you're not offending anyone, but you've also got to try and sell yourself and expose your brand if you want to. It's a really tough world to go into.
It's a very fine balance in social media, because unfortunately and fortunately, it's literally like 50-50 that everyone's got an opinion, which can be as good as it can be as bad. So, and a bad opinion may kind of influence someone, you know, who doesn't really think for themselves, you know, and, you know, that's how I guess a lot of racism comes around and stuff like that. So when you're talking about protests as well and not having an opinion, I think a lot of people, of course, they tune into sport to see good stuff, right? You know, sport is amazing, and, you know, when you're at the Olympics, you want to forget about all the stuff that's going on in the world. But, you know, as soon as that Olympics is over anyway, it's going to go back to normal. So a lot of these athletes have got to use this as a platform to, you know, have change, because there's so much, even though we're living as a humanity, living in the most prosperous and peaceful time we've ever had somehow, that, you know, there's still a lot of, you know, corruption, a lot of transparency issues, and a lot of issues, social issues that are going on in the world. And, you know, I'd back any athlete that, you know, had to use that as their platform to, you know, kind of invoke change. So, yeah, unfortunately, if you do speak up as an athlete, people don't want to hear it. But I think that's where your personality comes in, that I don't really care anyway. I don't really care what you think. I'm just going to say my opinion. Hopefully, you know, and not even hopefully, it's like, if it's your opinion, it's your opinion. And of course, you know, there's issues where you are wrong, but hopefully you're educated enough to do your research and actually figure out. Because I don't really tweet that much anyway. I'm not really a tweeter. I'm more of a lurker, more of an Instagrammer, I'm a lurker on TikTok, to be fair, as well. But like, I feel like social media should be used for social interaction, right? As an athlete, but it's never for that. It's never for that. It's a brand, as you said. It's really about, you know, how your brand is perceived. Because I reckon there's quite a few people out there, not just athletes, who, and I mean it, probably everyone, you know, everyone wants to, you know, be seen as they want to be seen. But no one's really their true identity on social media anyway. So yeah, just say what you want, man. Just who cares?
it's just, it feels almost like not a double-edged sword, but along those lines, that you can you can go to the Olympics and promote a brand. Which, say, Nike or Coca-Cola or anything like that. But the moment you go to the Olympics and promote social justice, I just don't understand how that's an issue, but promoting a multi-billion pound company is not an issue. It's just,
yeah,
it's a weird oxymoron.
Yeah, we are. It's a very deep issue with obviously very deep rooted issues such as capitalism, I guess, isn't it?
We can move quickly on if needs be.
Yeah. Money always talks at the end of the day. And, you know, a lot of these athletes require money, which is obviously provided by the sponsors. So it's not a simple like for like scenario, unfortunately, which you can take this variable and that equals that. because without sponsors, the Olympics wouldn't happen because it's a multi-billion pound project. And yes, you know, it's funny because it's really down to the viewers who make that decision and the people on Twitter who tweet and it goes viral. And that influences people who can't really think for themselves. That's what happens. And that's why social media is so scary and so scary for an athlete, because we've got this cancel culture as well. So if you say one thing, people will just cancel you. Like humans don't make mistakes. You know, it's everyone makes mistakes. So I'll just leave it there, really.
Well, we've always talked about trying to get swimming more exposure, haven't we? That's pretty much why we started this podcast. And of course, one thing we wanted to bring up was how we can sort of help swimming get on TV more, because we've got so many youngsters to inspire in the country, with the likes of yourself, Duncan, Jimmy, Freya, to take up the sport. How do we get more eyes on the sport of swimming?
I think I had this conversation yesterday with my friend where it's like, say footballers are paid X amount, you know, then nurses are paid X amount and then swimmers are paid X amount. So you take three completely different pay scales, because you know, you've got NHS, you know, what, 30 grand, I think it is, depending on what band you are. If you're a successful Olympian, you get hundreds of thousands or whatever it's called, whatever, you know, it depends on your personal brand. But if you're a footballer, you get millions. So, but there's obviously a reason for that, unfortunately, that people who deserve the money don't really get the money. But that's entertainment. You know, if you're a good entertainer and you can entertain millions of people, you'll be paid for that and compensated a fair share of that pie. So football is huge. So going back to the original question, I think swimming has really, it's got issues with kind of the approachability and the fun, because it's still stuck 20 years ago, 30 years ago, where, you know, for me, without the disrespect, I don't want to sit down and watch 1500 meters. You know, that's just my personal opinion, you know.
Same as Scott.
Yeah, I can fully agree with that.
I don't want to do that. I want to watch 50 meters. I want to watch who can swim the fastest on the water. I want to watch stuff which is short, snappy, dopamine rush, like a lot of these kids. And that's why TikTok's so successful, because it's 30 seconds a minute, yep. You know, the dopamine rush. So sport has got to adapt. And unfortunately, there's not one clear answer for swimming. But as an athlete, I think you've just got to really throw everything about the event, which is why ISL is obviously, you know, successful in the views of the athlete, but and some of the fans, but it's just not fast enough in terms of getting, because you've got to compete with other sports. It's not just like, you know, you've got Channel 1 to Channel 5 that we used to have as kids, and you just choose that. There's literally so many channels out there and so many media channels which you can go on, and YouTube and TikTok and all this stuff, that it's so hard to fight for that attention in terms of sport and TV time. But I think for me, that I'd want to see, say if I was retired now, I'd want to see the athlete stories. I want to see what they're doing in training. I want to see almost a background, a documentary. What does it take to make a swimmer? Because anyone can see the glory, and you'll see it at the Olympics, you'll see the glory, but that's only 0.000 recurring 1% of, you know, their life as an athlete. So why are we not investing more into their personal journeys, who they are, what, you know, what are they about, you know, and get their personalities extracted. And I think, you know, people will follow the sport a little bit more, but then it's obviously, how do you approach it without trying to look like you're ramming it down people's throat? But I think TV time, I think TV time is great, because I think I've just seen on Twitter that I think it's Athletics, BBC have just signed a deal with Athletics or UK Athletics to cover every single competition until 2024, I think. So you need to start at free. You need to start at, you know, getting it to as many people as possible for free. And then try and gain some traction. And then in a, you know, 10 years time, look at cricket. It used to be free on TV, but now it's all down pay-per-view, or you know, you've got to have Sky or something like that, which loses your fan base in the end anyway, because you're not attracting anyone new, because you've got to pay for it. So I think if I was creating a league, or I was doing something, or perhaps I was in charge of promoting a sport, I would literally, you'd obviously have to have quite a bit of money, but you would just, you know, send it out there for free and try and get as many people on board as you can.
I think that's very much why both me and Dan and Propulsion Swimming, we're fully invested in YouTube. And watching the trials on YouTube was great. It was a good experience to watch, and we're doing watch alongs with our subscribers as we watch swimmer meets, and we have a good fun. We have conversations with them as we're watching. It's kind of pushing swimming into new worlds that football's already in. They're already doing watch alongs on YouTube, and there's already loads of vloggers. And I sit down and I'll spend all afternoon watching a Cody Miller vlog or seeing behind the scenes of your training. It's stuff like that that's actually really interesting, and it's probably more inspiring to swimmers to see, especially the younger generation, than just the medal.
Yeah, and I think that's the problem as well, because obviously that has to come from the individual athlete to build that story.
Yeah, it's tough as well.
Because I have to focus on my training 110%. I can't be worrying about what angle the camera's at or what I have to say to the camera or something like that. So I think the more you can build a background to, you know, why athletes do it and condense the season, for God's sake, someone condense the season, because we're training like July to, I mean, we end in July, we start again in September. My goodness.
Yeah, there's no break at all. Yeah, it's crazy. Crazy.
And I could understand if it was a multi, I could understand if it was a multi-billion industry like football, where you had to play a certain amount of games for TV, you had to do a certain amount of things. But swimming in general needs to be revolutionized from the ground up, because at the current state, you're going to have less people participating, because you'd be like, why am I training 30 hours a week for pretty much no gain? I might love the sport, but eventually, that if you don't have the financial backing, or you don't have any sponsors, or you don't do what you know you're required to do at a certain time, such as a trial selection meet, that you'll end up dropping out anyway. We need to make it fun for kids. We need to almost ban mornings. I would say that you would not let anyone under 14 do a 4 a.m. because it is ridiculous. You do not need.
Yeah,
I think I did my first morning at 15 or late 14s, and that was 4 a.m. And even then, I was like, you know, this is mad. Why am I doing this? But I did like it. I did like it at the same time, but it was still so strange. I can't imagine being a 7-year-old being, and obviously they might want to do it, but they don't know if
they have the longevity in the sport.
In 8 years' time, that they're going to be exhausted and almost, you know, broken from the own sport that they originally loved every single day turned up to.
Yeah.
So it needs to be revolutionized from the ground up. And I think once you do that, then you can start thinking about commercialize it and, you know, sending out to broadcast.
I think we know loads of swimmers who've suffered from burnout, haven't we? They were so good at like 13, 14, and then you just don't see them again. They quit at 16 just because they've got nothing left. What's your thoughts on, because we've said it so many times, that we should be racing more in the UK. Maybe that's the fun side of it that swimmers are missing. What would your thoughts on that be?
Yeah, I mean, there's quite a few things going on in the background, but in terms of that, I think, you know, swimming in the UK, I think in America it's different because you can get open top pools, you can get more of a vibe, you get more of a weekend feel. Almost, you know, it's great to be there. But I think, again, we're stuck in that system where we turn up to an open meet, we do 10 hours, go home, turn off again the next day, 2 10-hours. I'm like, I couldn't think of anything worse personally.
I was going to say, we did a whole podcast literally, it was kind of like 2 weeks after ISL, and we said, why are we not doing more meets like this when it's, say, even if it starts at like university level, Loughborough versus Bath, ISL, that'd be really fun to watch. Yeah. Or then you take it down a level and you say, because we both swam at Gloucester, you say Gloucester against Cardiff, or kind of the Speedo leagues, from mine and Dan's memories, they were the most fun I've ever had in the swimming pool racing.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've got to obviously get the balance, because you've got to obviously get all these swimmers through, but then it's scalability. You can only have a certain amount of people in the room, especially with this COVID stuff. You only have a certain amount of people racing at the same time, but who should say that you can't create something like that? And we have got things in the background which are, you know, trying to address that, but you know, you want to be giving kids rewards for racing and racing well. And if they turn up to a meet, they can earn 100 quid, you know, 100 quid for like a 12-year-old, loads. So, and, you know, it's almost teaching them that, you know, you don't have to just slog it out. You can enjoy the race and you can enjoy the meet, that you don't have to do 10 races. You can just focus on 3 races. So the quality comes up, but the quantity comes down, and the time that you're at the pool comes down too, because no one wants to be there. I don't even think the judge or the referees want to be there for 10 hours, but it's all voluntary. You know, they do an amazing job, and they've held the judges and the voluntary members, you know, the timekeepers and the voluntary coaches are the backbone of the sport. So it's like, you know, you want to be treating them as well as you can.
give them a bit of a break.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Well, that's really interesting. I want to kind of quickly talk about breaststroke advice. So for any young swimmers who might be listening to the podcast, what advice would you give them?
For breaststroke, I would say for me is it's all about composure. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you create breaststroke or you do breaststroke and you're tense, you'll never get any faster because, you know, your muscles require so much more energy when they're tense. So try and, you know, be with the water, then fight the water, use it to your advantage. Think about on your slow draws where the water is actually going. So if you've got a super wide leg kick, obviously the water is going to go out wide. You want it to be going behind you. Obviously the bigger you are in the water, so if you're not a streamlined or, you know, your end point on your stroke isn't, you know, perfect, you know, the more drag you're going to create. So it's really, breaststroke's all about, so it's like a ballet. You've got to get everything right at the same time. Your composure, your energy, your stroke rate, where your stroke's going. You know, and obviously you've got to be tactically aware of everyone else as well. But I'd say focus on three things that you want to improve in a race and work on them every single time you race, definitely.
Brilliant. Well, Adam, this has been one of the most interesting podcasts we have ever done. I hope everyone at home has listened to it. We do usually finish our professional swimmers chat with some quick fire questions if you feel up for them.
Yeah, let's go.
So, very simple one. To start with, what's your favorite event?
100 meter breaststroke.
Who is your swimming idol?
Oh, God. Swimming idol. Oh, I don't know. Phelps, it's got to be, isn't it?
What's your proudest moment in swimming?
Winning 100 meter in Rio.
What's the hardest set you've ever done?
2100 breaststroke into a T20 breaststroke into 2050s max breaststroke.
Yeah. And to finish off, if you were to go on a road trip, three spaces in the car, you can have friends, family, celebrities who would join you.
Oh, God, three spaces. God. Elon Musk, so he can give me some Dogecoin. probably dead or alive.
Any. Oh, you can go for it.
It's such a hard question. It's always so hard. So many people in the world. Michael B. Jordan, because he's cool.
Nice.
I don't want to choose friends because I always ride with friends, so it's a bit of a waste. although I'd probably have George as well to experience it if he was a little bit older.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Well, Adam, thank you so much for coming on to this week's episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast. It's been really great having you. And good luck for Europeans, but most of all Tokyo later on this summer.
All right, thank you very much.
Yeah, seriously. Thank you, Adam. Thank you very much.
All right, cheers. All right, all the best, yeah?
Cheers.
Bye.
So that rounds up this week's episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast. Dan, I enjoyed that a lot.
I hope everyone listening was really inspired and actually got a real insight to what Adam's like.
Definitely. So if you haven't subscribed already, please do so on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere you get your usual podcast platform from. I've been Scott, he's been Dan, and we will see you in 7 days.
Catch you on next one, guys.
You've been listening to the Propulsion Swimming Podcast with Scott and Dan. We want to thank you for joining us and invite you to subscribe to the show, as well as checking out the Propulsion Swimming YouTube channel for weekly tutorials and videos to get your swimming fix. We will be back next week. Until then, we'll catch you on the next one.